Good morning. Today I'll be talking about the role of African-American social networks in adolescent sex education and parental monitoring. I have no financial relationships to disclose. First, I'm going to give you a little background on adolescent sexual behavior. Then I'll talk about what the literature says about the role of social networks in adolescent development. Then I'll talk about the results from the Teacher Children Well study, and finally talk about implications for intervention design. So why is it important to look at who educates African-American youth about sex education? In the United States, almost half of all adolescents have ever had sex. Rates increase by age. One-third of ninth graders have had sex, and by 12th grade, two-thirds of adolescents have had sex. There are almost 1 million pregnancies among 15 to 19-year-olds annually, and almost half of incident sexually transmitted infections occur among adolescents. African-American adolescents experience more adverse sexual health outcomes. They initiate sex approximately 1 year earlier than other adolescents. Their pregnancy rates are 3 times higher than white adolescents, and their sexually transmitted infection rates are 5 to 30 times higher than their peers. And although schools and families represent traditional sources of sexual health education and monitoring for youth, adolescent social networks also play a role. However, the literature in this area is fairly limited. A social network is a map of relationships between individuals ranging from casual acquaintance to close familial bonds. This diagram represents the major spheres of influence described in the literature, and spheres of influence move from more to less intimate. So how do social networks affect adolescent sexual health? At the level of the nuclear family, parents are children's first sexual health educators. Certain parenting practices, including good communication, monitoring and supervision, and strong family cohesion, are associated with improved sexual health outcomes. Extended family members have been shown to enhance the positive effect that parents have on adolescents. They also serve as protective agents for those adolescents. And of note, African-American adolescents prefer support from extended family members more than unrelated adults. There's an extensive body of literature that demonstrates that peers serve as an important source of sexual health information for adolescents. However, this information is not always accurate. Very few studies have looked at the role that unrelated adults and community members play in adolescent sexual health. The research that has been done has shown that social support from unrelated adults enhances the positive effect that parents have on adolescents, and they also serve as protective agents. There's been research that has shown that community supervision can delay sexual activity. So in summary, there's a lot of literature demonstrating the effect that parents and peers have on adolescent sexual health, but relatively little scholarly work has examined the role of unrelated adults and community members within an adolescent social network and the role that they play in sex education and monitoring. Therefore, this study asked, who in adolescent social networks is involved in providing sex education and monitoring? And what role do social networks play in educating African-American adolescents about sex and monitoring their social activities? The data from this study came from the Teacher Children Well study. The aim of the Teacher Children Well study is to develop and test an intervention for African-American parents to improve parent-adolescent communication about sex and parental monitoring of adolescent social activities. The data from the study came from phase one, which was a formative research phase, which included focus groups and questionnaires. Phases two and three are ongoing, and they include the development and test of the intervention. And I'd like to recognize our principal investigator at Teacher Children Well, Dr. Letha Akers, who's in the audience today. We recruited for phase one through a variety of resources. We use a hospital-based research registry. We posted flyers in community centers, hospitals, doctors' offices, and libraries. And we also did web advertising. In order to be included in the study, participants had to self-identify as African-American, reside in Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, and have at least one parent and one youth aged 15 to 17 per family agree to participate. 20 focus groups were conducted between December 2007 and March 2008. Focus groups were stratified by gender and participant type, meaning either parent or youth. The analysis for this study focused only on the mother and father transcript because these results did not arise to a significant degree in the other transcripts. And the focus group question guide explored parental monitoring and communication about sex. This table shows some sample characteristics from our study population. Overall, our study population was more highly educated and more likely to be married than African Americans in Allegheny County. As you can see, almost 40% of our population had completed college compared to only 8% of African Americans in Allegheny County. And almost half of our participants were married compared to one-third of African Americans in Allegheny County. All focus groups were audiotaped, transcribed, and coded using Atlas TI, which is a computer software program used for organizing qualitative data. We used a grounded theory approach to content analysis and the constant comparison method. And in brief, this means open coding, which is going through the transcripts and reading line by line and identifying themes that are prevalent across focus group type, gender, and focus group, either parent or youth. This led to axial coding, which is a collaborative process where we put the codes into a hierarchical structure. That led to the development of a code book. Two independent researchers then went back and used the code book to apply the codes to the transcripts, and any discrepancies were resolved via consensus. And we used three major coding categories. The first was the definition of social networks. The second was the role of social networks in sex education, and third is the role of social networks in monitoring social and dating activities. This is the same graphical representation of a social network that I showed before, and I'll now use it to describe how parents describe the people who are involved in their adolescents' lives and how that impacted sex education and monitoring. Parents really discussed how their social networks were defined by who their children associated with and hung out with. Within the context of sex education, parents said that the nuclear family, meaning either parents or siblings, and extended family, being cousins, aunts, and uncles, and grandparents, serve as the main sex educators. They can provide direct factual information, or they can also serve as role models. They said that peers can serve as positive and negative role models. For example, a friend who has gotten pregnant at an early age, or another friend who has contracted a sexually transmitted infection. And parents talked about how unrelated adults and community members informally discuss sexual behavior, which I'll talk more about in a bit. And there's a bit of murkiness between unrelated adults and community members. Basically, how parents distinguished them was that unrelated adults were people who already had some sort of familiarity, either with the youth or the family, and that community members were people who had no familiarity at all with the youth. Within the context of monitoring, parents did not talk about community members playing a significant role. Again, they said that the nuclear family and extended family serve as the main monitors. And they said that unrelated adults will assist parents with monitoring by checking in with them to letting them know how their child is behaving when they're not around. Next, I'd like to discuss the second major topic, which was how social networks function to provide sex education to adolescents. This first slide is meant to highlight the similarities and differences between traditional sex education topics like those found on the left and the topics that parents said that social networks talk about with their youth, those on the right, including appropriate social and dating behavior, healthy relationships, responsibility, and partner selection. And parents really felt that schools and parents should cover traditional sex education topics, but they did provide examples of how other adults within their social networks would cover these family-based sex education topics. In the interest of time, I won't give a quote for each of these, but in regards to discussion of appropriate behavior, one mother said, "All of a sudden, her arm went around his neck, and I'm sitting there like, what is this all about? I went to her and said, 'What are you doing?' She said, 'We're just friends.' I said, 'Well, that is nice, but young girls don't carry yourself out in public like that. If you're friends, just sit by him and talk to him like normal.' And then she said, 'Okay,' and we didn't have any more issues." In addition to discussing how adults within their children's social networks provide sex education, adults also serve as sex educators through role modeling. They educate community children, and they talked about how mothers and fathers really have different roles and techniques that they use. This quote is an example of how one father said that one of his son's friend's experiences affected him. He said, "My son goes to an all-boys school, and one of his best friends got a girl pregnant, and they're 16. I think that woke my son up right there." Adults within children's social networks also educate other children. One mother said, "I have a best friend who says, 'Oh no, my child would never do that,' and her son introduced my son to everything. I told her a long time ago, 'You gotta stop it.' I caught him coming out of an apartment building with a girl, and they just looked too guilty. She doesn't know how to ask those questions, so I asked them for her. I'm not afraid." Mothers serve as confidants for their children's friends who might not have a similar relationship with their own mothers. As one mother said, "Just try to help that child. When someone comes to you and confides in you something, maybe that girl doesn't have that relationship with her mother to tell her mother." And there was actually a lot of disagreement in our groups over whether or not an adult should disclose information that another youth told them to that child's parents. Some mothers felt that, yes, absolutely, it's your responsibility to let the parent know what the child told you, and other mothers felt that that would be betraying the trust of the child and would be severing that tie so that then that child wouldn't have anyone to talk to at all. Fathers serve as role models. They also bring up sex education topics in informal settings with their children and their children's friends. As one father said, "I think it's of vital importance, especially for us black men, because there are so many young out there that don't have any male role models at all, especially the black boys that don't have a father figure in their life. It's so much more important for us to be able to talk to young men and talk to even the girls, be that male role model." The third major theme is the role of monitoring and the role that social networks play in monitoring. There were three major themes that arose. The first, that was then, this is now, is really how parents compared how things were when they were growing up to how things are now. The second, parent networks, talks about how parents work together and communicate to monitor not only their children, but the children within their social networks, and also the challenges that parents face to monitoring children. So parents continually compared how things were when they were growing up to how things are now. They felt that the community was more involved in supervision and discipline in the past than it is now. One father said, "And I think that shows some of the changes in our culture and our neighborhoods. From when I was a kid, anybody's mother could correct you." Parents also described a parent network where they work together to monitor the whereabouts of not only their children, but their children's friends and who they hang out with. They share information and they get to know their children's friends and their parents. One mother said, "I kind of have a parent network where my son and his friends are planning on doing something. All the mothers have talked, or their fathers have called back and forth. So somebody is aware, going to see what movie, who is picking them up, who is taking them, and they don't even know half of the time that we've already figured it out." Parents will also visit the homes of their children's friends and boyfriend or girlfriend in order to get sort of an idea for what the standards of behavior are in their home, and also to get an idea of what kind of parenting style these parents have. One mother said, "Well, first we would meet with the parents of the child and exchange information. For example, basically find out what goes on at their home, just to get a feel, exchange phone numbers, introduce each other on a first name basis would be nice as well, just to kind of break the ice to see who your child is actually involved with." Parents also talked about using technology, specifically cell phones, in order to stay connected with each other. Parents would call each other when they would see their child out and let them know, yes, they're behaving appropriately, or no, they're not behaving appropriately. One mother said, "Most of the time when my son date, wherever he is, it may not be there, but someone we know will call and say, 'I saw your son over at such and such. He was doing okay.' Or, 'I saw your son at Subway with so-and-so. He was acting the same way he would as if he was with you.'" Non-parent adults also help parents by supervising while they're not around. One mother said, "I think it takes a group. My neighbor is great. He's 70 years old. He will come over and play basketball with my son. So I think that village effect is needed to monitor these kids." So there are certain challenges, there are differences in parenting styles. One mother said, because there are so many parents that are lax, that you find yourself to be the minority of the parent, because it's like, oh, well, they don't care what you do, and we don't care what, and I'm like, well, I care. I'm sorry, I care. Absence of parental involvement was another challenge that parents faced. One mother said, some parents just don't care. Don't care what their kids do with who, where they're out, whoever comes in the house. Anybody that wants to come over, we meet their parents. Parents also talked about consequences for interfering. They feared the reaction that they would get from both parents and youth if they interfered in another youth's life. This quote illustrates fear of how an adult might react. You know, back in the day, if your kid acted a fool, the whole community could handle that. Nowadays, you better not say anything to my child. And these quotes illustrate fear of how a youth might react. You mess around and get beat up. They look at you like, you invade my privacy. So in summary, a variety of adults, related or unrelated, within an adolescent's social network may influence their sexual health, education, or help monitor their social and dating behaviors. These adults are less likely to provide factual information about anatomy, puberty, STIs, and are more likely to discuss informal sex education topics like partner selection, healthy relationships, and appropriate behavior or dress. Regarding monitoring, parents often work together using a parent network to monitor their children's social dating activities and the children within their social networks. And parents struggle when they don't have equal involvement from other parents within that network. Similar to our findings, other studies that have examined social network influence on adolescent health behaviors have found that individuals within an adolescent's nuclear family, extended family, and unrelated adults have an influence on adolescent development. The few studies that have looked at social network influence on sexual behaviors found that extended family members and unrelated adults within the African American community help parents by monitoring their activities when parents are not around, which is consistent with our results. Studies have also found that parents of youth from many different ethnic backgrounds feel that the community is less involved now than it was when they were growing up, which is consistent with our results. And other studies have shown that the types of individuals that participate in sex education and monitoring are similar to the experiences of our participants. And all of this increases the validity of our findings. Some of the limitations of this study, generalizability, because the study was conducted in Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, these results may not be generalizable to other African American populations. However, the similarities between our results and results from other studies increases our validity. Self-selection bias, certain types of parents may have been more interested in this type of study or more willing to participate. As we saw from our participant characteristics, our study population was more highly educated and more likely to be married than African Americans in Allegheny County. And social desirability bias. This is inherent potential limitation in focus group studies, and we addressed this by looking for themes that were consistent across focus groups, gender, and family member type. And here again, the similarity between our findings and those of other studies increases the validity of our findings. So what does this all mean for adolescent sexual health interventions? In order to reach adolescents and reduce risky sexual behavior, which can lead to negative health outcomes like teen pregnancy and sexually transmitted infections, all the adults that are that interact and influence adolescent sexual health development should be included. And this includes extended family members and unrelated adults. So interventions should consider including them. Also, any interventions that aim to change adolescent behavior by increasing parent communication, parent-adolescent communication about sex, should consider the different styles that mothers and fathers use. And I'd like to end with a quote from one of the fathers that really illustrates the importance of unrelated adults in adolescent development. First of all, there is an African proverb, "It takes a village to raise a child, and I sincerely feel you must have other people involved, not just talking about sex, but in life in general with your kids." Thank you. Are there any questions? No? Okay, thank you very much.